I was on the worst team in the league, and I wasn't playing because I thought I was too old.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble. We are going to be looking back on today's show about projections we made at the start of the season, what we got right, what we got wrong, why we got it right, why we got it wrong, and sort of lessons that we can learn from any of those mistakes or things that we got right and projecting that forward into future seasons. And I say we because I'm not doing this one alone. I am joined by the man that's sometimes known as Playoff K. It is, of course, Kyle McEwen.
I love you guys. Except for you.
Hey,
Kyle, you are here ready to talk projections. You've got your Bucks hat on, as I see you've switched allegiance, even though the Bucks are taking on your former love, the Detroit Pistons. We're ready to talk about what we thought, though, at the start of the season when we did our projection sets over at Basketball Monster. Things that we got right, things that we got wrong, why we got it wrong. Remember, we did this last season and there was a lot of talk about Miles Turner. I don't know if there was anyone that was sort of as egregiously out on this season as we were with Miles last year. But when you're looking back at what you looked at this, or what you projected at the start of the season, what's one thing that, or the major thing that you stand out that you go, you know what? Didn't get that one quite right.
See, it might come off a little callous just because I was off on Victor Oladipo keeping up the rhythm that he had before he got injured. And we know that his steal rate was down this season, and you called that. You knew that was going to come back down, and that's something that I didn't really key in on. So I think that was something early in the season that I wish that I had done better on, I guess.
I did say that. I said, look, with Oladipo, there was people saying, yeah, I'm going to take him in the first round. I'm taking pick 10, pick 11. I was like, I don't see any of this stuff holding up. But to say that, I still had him projected way too high. I still had him middle of the second round, even though I was throwing caveats out there every day that I spoke. Hey, I'm really worried about this being able to sustain. I'm really worried about him being able to continue to do this. I still had him projected in that mid-second round range, which was obviously wrong. He finished the season outside the top 50 on a per-game basis. That's not even including the injury factor, which obviously, you know, wrecked his season. But everything was well down from him. The shooting was down. The defensive stats were down. So I think I got some of it right. I also got some of it wrong because I obviously still had him projected too high. But I think that's one that a lot of people missed on, not even considering the injury.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It was one that I think a lot of people looked at the Pacers and said, Evans, but you still expect that Oladipo is going to be leaned on in the same way. And look, regardless, at least you were ardent in discussing the possibility of it. And I was just more kind of laissez-faire thinking that, no, he took that step and he's going to continue to push in that regard. Because I felt also that he was going to continue to push for possibly being an MVP candidate, even though I didn't necessarily think that he would contend for that. Just seeing him become the all-star that he was, I thought we were going to continue to see that push, or at least sustained production.
One of the big things I spoke about with Oladipo, as you mentioned, was the defensive stats, the steals and the blocks, and they were well down this season. He was putting up, you know, to the end of the season before, like, you know, 2.5-3 steals a game for a big stretch of time. His blocks are also through the roof. This season, just 1.7 steals and 0.3 blocks. It's such a big, big drop off from the 2.4 steals and 0.8 blocks that he averaged last season, not to mention an inexplicable 6% drop in free throw percentage, a 6% point drop in field goal percentage as well. His threes didn't go in at the same rate. His usage also dropped by 2 percentage points. So there was indicators all across there, even before that injury struck, that there was some unsustainability. I just didn't go hard enough in thinking that the regression's going to come. But I think a lot of people, you know, would have hopefully, I know I steered clear of Oladipo in a lot of drafts this season. So I'll take that as a win and a loss there. But if I'm looking at one that I did miss on, yeah, pretty significantly. Jimmy Butler, I had him as the 12th best player heading into the season, and that's with even the uncertainty of him in Minnesota. I thought that no matter where he went, because his game wasn't necessarily predicated on being a 28-point scorer, a high-usage guy, but heading to Philadelphia, you know, he didn't drop significantly, but a guy that you might take at the turn of the first round when in reality, is probably a guy you should have taken at the start of the third round. It is a big difference at that pointy end of the draft. And that ended up burning me quite a bit. Butler had struggles in Philadelphia. He wasn't able to do anything close to what he was doing in Minnesota previously. And that's one that I was off on a bit. It doesn't seem like a big deal going from 12 to 24, but to me, that's a big difference when there's many other players that you could have been taking over Jimmy Butler in that area. I just thought that he'd be able to withstand. And look, to be fair to myself, and I don't like doing that, but I thought he'd be going to Miami or to the Clippers, where he would be the number one guy, not to Philadelphia, where he'd have to share it with Joel Embiid and see that usage drop right down this season, down from 25% to 21%. Yeah, that did impact him as well. A lot of his other numbers, fairly similar, but heading to Philadelphia where that usage took a hit, plus his assist rate took a hit with Simmons and Embiid handling the ball quite a bit there as well. It was just too much for him to recover to be that guy who was a back-end first-round player for the two previous seasons.
See, I mean, I guess, like, can you really call projecting Jimmy Butler? I guess, were you expecting him to get traded?
Yeah, I was expecting him to get traded, not to Philadelphia, but I was thinking that no matter where he goes, I didn't think the Sixers would pull it off. I thought he's still going to be in this similar role. It's not, you know, his role in Minnesota is not based on him being a 30% usage guy and it's going to take this big hit. He can still get his assist and run things and get his steals. And he did those things, but that drop in, you know, 1.5 assists per game and that usage drop of, you know, 3 points per game and 3 percentage point usage percentage dropping down, it took that impact away. And I didn't foresee the Philadelphia side of this trade happening. I was thinking he goes to Miami, he just runs the show, and then he would be able to keep up what he was doing.
Yeah, and I'd see in the rankings that I have for Jimmy, I had him out at 17th in my 8 cat. Yep. So looking at that, I think that was a fair expectation to go into the season with. But, the move to Philadelphia, obviously, that took a hit for him. What was funny about it was that he did improve his efficiency with Philadelphia. So some of that scoring drop-off that you may have anticipated in regards to the number of shots he's taken was still kind of buoyed by the fact that he was shooting a better percentage there. So, I guess I have a hard time trying to let you admit that Jimmy Butler was maybe an error in any regard.
I appreciate that. But to me, when I look at it, and I'm looking at my Yemo list of rankings, like Butler at 12, and I see the guys behind him, Paul George, Joel Embiid are the guys I had in 13 and 14. Like, to me, that's a miss if you're looking at drafting Butler ahead of those guys, and that wouldn't have worked out too well in your advantage there when those guys clearly exceeded what Butler was able to do. When you're looking at what you did, Kyle, is there anything that stands out as a big win, a big projection win that you had that others maybe weren't quite as high on?
I think JaVale McGee is one that has stood out throughout the season as people would reach out and be like, hey, good call on JaVale McGee early in the season, at least anticipating that he was going to hold that starting job for most, you know, in most respects, play bigger minutes under with the Lakers. Some ways difficult to expect after the first year of Luke Walton with the Lakers. We saw him limit all of his center's minutes. To see him take on JaVale McGee, give JaVale a considerably bigger role than what JaVale was playing with the Warriors. And, you know, one of the narratives around JaVale while he was with the Warriors was the idea that his asthma and other physical limitations maybe kept him from playing those bigger minutes. But we saw this season, he said, look, I got healthy. I'm out here, and that allowed him to play the bigger minutes for the Lakers this season. So I think JaVale McGee is one that kind of stood out as who it's not like I was on my soapbox saying go out and get JaVale McGee, but when as far as the projections came out, it said this is definitely somebody whose ceiling is high and who you should have a clear eye on later in the draft if you're going to be targeting your big man stats, especially your blocks.
Yeah, you're saying, look, McGee is a great last round pick to get. I had him 119th, which was obviously significantly lower than where he ended up. He was almost a top 60 player over the course of the season. Started out hot, suffered pneumonia, which really knocked him around, and then came in strong. And I think I mentioned this on my podcast last week that over the fantasy playoffs, the standard playoff schedule, I think he was like the fourth best player over that time frame, which is obviously ridiculously good to have that guy who you could have got off waivers at points when if it's Zubats before he was traded and McGee came in and started playing all those big minutes. So I agreed with you that he was a great last round pick. I bought more into the asthma narrative with McGee that he wouldn't be able to play these 28-29 minutes a game, but he obviously had that fixed, and he was a real impact guy. Now, on some of his on-court stuff, you can mention there are struggles with some of his defensive positioning and all that sort of stuff. But in terms of what he produced for fantasy, it was obviously really, really impactful. You nailed that one, Kyle. And anyone who took McGee with those later rounds would have been pretty happy with that production, either at the start of the season or the end of the year.
Thanks, pal.
If I'm looking at one of the ones that I got right, I was pretty happy with how, and I'm going to cheat here and use two guys, the top two rookies, DeAndre Ayton and Luka Doncic. I had Ayton as my 34th ranked player. I had Doncic as my 43rd ranked player. Both of those guys were two or three rounds lower in terms of their ADP. Doncic had an ADP of 79 when the season began. Ayton's was 55, so we're talking 2-3 rounds difference there. Now, they didn't finish up as the 34th or the 43rd ranked player, but they were within 10 spots of both of those. And I'm always one to be careful with rookies, be aware that you're not taking them too high. But those two guys I was relatively confident in, especially Ayton as a third round guy. We stressed the importance of efficient big men, and he was that guy. I was taking him in the third round, start of the fourth round in drafts, which seemed ballsy in a lot of those drafts based on some of the comments that people were leaving during the draft when I was making those picks. But I was happy with how both of those turned out, and they delivered almost exactly what I was expecting out of those guys. Now, I didn't expect Doncic to have the exact same usage that he got. I also didn't expect his free throws to suck as much as they did. So he maybe even exceeded, or he did exceed what I expected, but I still had him as a top 50 player this season, and he ended up about 51st overall.
No, I think my very first projection set definitely had them lower than where I ended up with them going, after seeing a little bit of both of them in the preseason and things like that. So near the end of the draft season, they were both projecting out to be near top 25 players or top 35 players in my model. So that was kind of the expectation. So it's funny because if I go back and I look at my initial projection set, I had Ayton and Doncic really close at 82 and 85. So it's just they ended up somewhere in the middle between what I thought coming into preseason, where I rested with them at the end of preseason. And it's kind of interesting to see that everything always kind of falls back to the median ideas of what we have on things.
Who's another one that you whiffed on, I guess, when we're looking at preseason? Who's another guy that you missed on significantly, I guess, in your mind?
I think you have to point towards Jonathan Isaac in a lot of respects. That's probably the first guy I should have mentioned it when I was talking about guys who you maybe whiffed on. And it's not to say that Jonathan Isaac didn't do some of the things that we expected through certain parts of the season. He did, but he was inconsistent. Maybe I should have looked to the fact that a new coach was coming in, or the fact that he missed so much of his first. How many seasons is Jonathan Isaac in now?
His second.
So maybe I should have looked to the fact that so much of his first season was missed due to his ankle issues. So, but ultimately we were getting another taste of what Jonathan Isaac is, but he didn't live up to what I expected him to live up to, and especially where the hell I was drafting him in a lot of my leagues.
Yeah, I had him projected in the 60s to begin the season. Obviously, didn't end up in that area. Finished the season 126. It did have real significant stretches where he was a top 100 guy. He did suffer another ankle injury at the beginning of the year. He did really struggle at times, but he also showed those flashes, Kyle, that made us so high on him. He played three or four fewer minutes per game this year than I thought he would. I thought they'd be giving him a consistent 30 a night. We also saw his steal rate drop this season a little bit at times. The block rate, it dropped a lot. He was at 2.2 steals per 36 last year, just one steal per 36 this season. And that's a number when he was able to put up big steal numbers at Florida State. He replicated that in his first 27 games in the NBA. And you think, okay, well, at least even if it's not 2.2 per 36, it can be 1.8 or 1.7. But to drop by as much as it did, if he comes in and averages 1.8 steals per 36 and translates that to 1.3, 1.4 steals per game, he's not the 126th ranked player. He's the 70th ranked, 80th ranked player, and then a preseason ranking of 60 is not that far off. And that's how much that steals category can really change things. And that's, again, why when I talked about Oladipo at the start, when those 2.5, 2.7 steals per game, I go, well, that's probably not going to stick. And when it drops, you're going to see those numbers really tumble. And then in the opposite way here, that did happen with Isaac. We're expecting it to stick up or at least keep at a really high level, and it didn't. And the lower minutes, the ankle injuries, the offensive inconsistency. I think I'm probably going to get sucked into Isaac again next season. Probably not as high, and I won't need to be anywhere near as high on him. But I wouldn't be surprised if the third season comes and we get a little bit more minutes increase and offensive consistency from him.
Well, and there's going to be a lot of hype tied to what he does in this playoff series too. And the fact that the Magic just extended it an extra game, giving him a little bit more exposure on a bigger platform is huge. He had that big shot near the end of the game yesterday. So we'll see, man. I still look at him and I'm like, why don't they have him be a bigger part of the offense? And part of that makes me feel like if they had him be a bigger part of the offense, it would just give him that little extra push of energy to maybe do a little bit more defensively than what he already does. Although I think you have to presume that most of the reason why his defensive statistical production had, I don't know, is it because of the new defensive schemes of Steve Clifford, or is it because he's just not consistent in his defensive output? And it'll be interesting to see if he can rebound next season at all from some of the ways that he flubbed.
I think the consistency is a real issue. I'm not sure. Look, there's some of it is probably Clifford's schemes, but we saw there were stretches of games where he'd come in and put up big steal numbers and big block numbers. Like, he had a run of games in February where he had 2 blocks, 3 blocks, 2 blocks, 3 blocks, 2 blocks, 5 blocks, 3 blocks. Like, that is a huge run of blocks across that time. And in that time, he had 3 games with 2 or more steals as well. So it can happen. It's just that consistency was a real problem on the defensive end. And it often tied into games where he'd do more offensively. The defensive numbers would drop off as well. So that is a bit of a concern there. But he still showed that he can do it. It wasn't like it was completely absent in the Clifford system. And stringing together 6, 7, 10 games in a row of big defensive numbers is really encouraging. It's, I guess, taking that next step and doing it for 40 games. Doing it for 50 games instead of 15 games over the season. And that really does end up helping you more from a fantasy perspective than what we saw from him this season. One guy, Kyle, that I was high on this season, I think we both were. I'm not sure exactly where you were on Taurean Prince, but he was pretty poor this season. He was a guy that when he was drafted, I was never massively into him. I always, and I've said this plenty of times, at the draft, I thought that DeAndre Bembry was a better prospect than what Prince was. He surprised me last season, but we always took what he did in that April portion of the season with a grain of salt when Schroeder was out and he was initiating everything. But to be able to initiate everything and then actually succeed in it is big as well. And we never expected him to go out and average 20 points with 5 assists, which he did over those last 7 or 8 games last season. We never expected that, but I also expected him to be able to take somewhat of a leap forward with another point guard like Trae Young providing some assist and taking some attention away from Prince, but he just never was able to live up to anything. He suffered some personal issues. He had some injuries. He played only 28 minutes per game, down from last season. Interestingly, the shooting from him did improve. He hit 39% of his threes again, 38.5% last season, so that's an encouraging thing, but the assists dropped well down. He's providing nothing defensively. The rebounding numbers were well down as well. He didn't play as much as a small ball four as what he did the year before. And I really worry about where his future trajectory is now.
Yeah, he's an interesting player. He's somebody who... It's weird that he didn't play more this year considering how much... Trae Young played. I don't know why I whiffed on their biggest player's name. But... So it's surprising to look at Taurean Prince and be like, he played 28 minutes a game. He did get limited a little bit just by, I guess Pierce doesn't like him as much as.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it.
But I mean, you look at Prince's output, shooting 44% from the field, 82% from the free throw line. I mean, I don't feel like he's a terrible player for their fit and all that. So. Maybe it was just the fact that DeAndre Bembry had such good stretches that they needed to give Bembry a little bit extra run than what you would have maybe planned on. But Taurean Prince came out as the 50th ranked player in my projections to begin the preseason, which is what I'm referencing right now. And yeah, that's way off the 113 that he ended up ranked out to finish the season for 8-cat. So, but again, it was a couple of minutes off of what my projection was, which was 31 minutes, and I think that's where most of it came from. But you're right, a lot of the things that he did decrease in, we kind of anticipated, I did expect him to play more time at power forward than he did this season, which, I mean, it just worked out that way that Vince Carter was playing really well and you know, fun. He was fun to watch, which is crazy.
What about on the, we'll go back to a positive one here, Kyle. Who else did you, I guess, have more faith in than others did heading into the season?
Oh, Biscuits. Shoot, I wasn't ready for that one. Do you want to go with yours first and I'll come in?
I can go with my one. I had Buddy Hield. I had him ranked as the, in the preseason, I've just lost his name, I had him as the 57th ranked guy. He had an ADP of 94. He ended up actually exceeding that, ending the season 49th. Now, I had him, I also really stressed this at the time. You don't need to pick him at 57. I'm not saying draft him in round 4 or round 5, but get him later on in the draft. Now, stop patting myself on the back as much. I had him that high because I thought his steal rate, which was really good last season, would be able to at least maintain. It would drop a bit, but maintain. But it fell way off. He just upped the other parts of his game and became a 20-point-per-game scorer and hit 3.5 triples per game, which is so far above what he was able to do last season. So, well, I had him in that area, and he was a real big target, a big sleeper guy of mine to grab. It was for marginally different reasons. Now, I did think that he would play more minutes this season, so I got that right. I thought he'd have a bigger usage this season. It got that right as well, a bigger role in the offense. Just I thought that the steal rate would be able to keep up. And if it did keep up, we're talking about a top 40, top 35 guy maybe, if he was able to at least replicate what he did last season in terms of steals. But I'll take that one as a win for me to have Hield ranked that high and then have him exceed that is I was pretty happy to see it go that way with Bud.
No, I definitely was not as high on Buddy as you were. My preseason rankings actually had him at freaking 91, so that shows you where I was coming into it. But Buddy, I had him projected for a low amount of minutes because I wasn't necessarily sure that he was going to start for them this season because he came off the bench all the previous season. So I had projected for 26 minutes, which is why he was at 91. If I had projected him for the 30, 31, 32 minutes, then obviously his projection would have been much higher and more reasonable, closer to where he was this season. So that's a guy who I just look at, and it's awesome to see somebody kind of break my expectations for them. The reduced steals rate is like whatever after you see the way he shot this year. And it's Buddy Hield's one of those guys that's like, oh, I wasn't a fan of him coming into the season and now I am. So, which is awesome. So,
yeah, I was not massive on Buddy heading into the season in terms of what he is as a player, but he really did, you know, take some big steps forward this year and cemented himself as this guy who looks like he could have a few seasons here as this consistent top 50 guy, as a big time scoring threat, which is always great to be able to get those guys outside the top 20, top 25. And Bud looks like he could be one of those guys for many years to come. Did you find another one where you can pat yourself on the back?
I mean, I really don't like patting myself. See, that's just it. I'll look at Malcolm Brogdon, and I'll say that I was fairly convinced that he was going to be in a starting role, that he was going to be playing a good spot for the Bucks. He's also somebody though that I wish I would have taken more in my drafts, but he was definitely somebody who I'd say I was higher on than what a lot of other people may have been coming into this season.
Yeah, I had him 120th, which, again, I just was a little bit worried about what they were going to do with him. Obviously, I should have had faith that they had a coach who knows what he's doing versus two coaches who didn't know what they were doing last season, and they would play their best players good minutes, which it's always a pretty novel concept to play your good players a good amount of minutes. But Brogdon really stepped up his game as well. Yeah, the shooting was unbelievable. I didn't really see that coming as a 51% shooter from the field. Barely missed a free throw at all, 43% from there. Now, I know he's a good shooter, but he took steps forward in that area as well. So I was under on him, definitely, and probably under where you had him as well in terms of the preseason projections with where Brogdon sat. From a negative point of view, if I'm going to look at someone that I did get wrong pretty considerably, I'm going to go with... Let's go with Gary Harris, who I had at number 46, which injuries had a real impact on Gazza this season, no doubt about that. But to finish 168th outside the top 150 on a per-game basis is very disappointing. Now, some of it you could, chalk up to the fact that he only played 29 minutes per game, but it wasn't just that. The shooting dropped way off for him, 34% from three, just 43% overall. And that were two of the biggest mainstays of what Harris had been able to do. From a fantasy point of view, last year, he was at 49 from the field, 40 from three, 83 from the free throw line, true shooting of 60. He was down true shooting to 53 this season. The steal rate was, his steal numbers were cut in half, 1.8 steals down to 0.9. And that's a big, big drop off there as well. So to me, to have him in mid 40s where I had him was not crazy because he was the 41st ranked player the year before. And yes, the Nuggets did get Paul Millsap back, but Paul Millsap's not a high usage guy. And Harris's game isn't built on usage. And his usage was almost exactly the same as the year before. He just had a pretty inexplicable drop in efficiency, and the steal rate completely disappeared. His assist rate also dropped, and that's got nothing to do with the fact that Isaiah Thomas was there because he barely played, which I thought could be a little bit of a worry. Maybe they'll take the ball out of these guys' hands. But Thomas played, 10 games for the Nuggets? That wasn't the issue. It was just a complete regression right across the board from Gary, which I could not see coming.
No, I'll have to take a kick in the nards on Gary Harris as well. So, but as you pointed out, like a lot of that was, well, no, we should probably, maybe, I think it's fair to say we should have dialed him back more just because of the litany of options that team had this season too. Although I think if he was healthy all season, there's a good chance he would have simply carved out a bigger role and maybe found his fit in the mix a little bit better as well.
And what happened as well with him is when he came back from injury, his role got even less. Like, so at the start of the season, he was putting up some pretty solid numbers. Like his first 20 games, 20 points, 18, 28, 18, 13, 23, 16, 14, 20, 13, 20. Like these are all pretty big games from him. He had some steals mixed in there and he looked pretty okay. And then he got hurt and then it was pretty much over from there when he came back. The minutes, like he wasn't the same guy at the start of the season that he was last year because those steals weren't as plentiful. He had some poor shooting games in there, quite a few sub 40% shooting games, but still the usage was up for him. The scoring was there. It was sort of balancing out. But then when he came back, the efficiency never returned. The usage dropped. His scoring wasn't there. His minutes weren't there. And that really, really doomed him to be a huge bust if you were taking him in that fourth or fifth round range, which again, that's where he finished the year before. So you've got to be really careful of guys like him who was based on really high shooting levels. There is a level of variance across seasons. We've seen that over the past 2 to 3 seasons, guys having inexplicably high or inexplicably low shooting seasons, which really throws their rankings, they can do whatever they want in their spare time, throws their rankings out of whack pretty considerably. And we saw that with Harris here.
Yeah, absolutely. If I was going to look to somebody else that I got wrong or that I was just wrong on in general coming into the season, it's Trae Young. I thought that he was going to be a dud all year long. I thought that he was going to make that team extremely boring and frustrating to watch. And he was exactly the opposite of that. Yeah, we saw struggles from Trae Young early in the season, and he had his streakiness at times. But the passing, the way he plays the game with such, I mean, it's just fun. The different dribble moves that he uses, the fact that he's willing to go between his legs, around his back, around other players with his passes. Great vision. I said so many mean things about him last summer that I never want to say anything mean about him again, because he's one of my favorite players to use in 2K whenever we do like restricted drafts that allow us to draft, 84 ranked players and stuff like that. So, Trae Young, I whiffed on you, buddy. You're amazing and I love you.
I was obviously pushing the opposite side of that barrel for Trae Young to you, but I didn't even have him as high as he ended up. I had him 84th. He ended up in the top 60. He'll be a top 40, top 30 staple, it feels like, for years to come. So I was higher on him than ADP. I was higher on him than you, but still didn't end up getting him as high as he needed to go in those overall rankings. I want to talk about a guy that I got right, and it feels weird to say got right from a negative point of view, but Fartin Will Barton was being drafted in the top 50 in a lot of cases. I had him as the 79th ranked player. Even that ended up being too high. But I was, you know, 20, 25 spots below where his ADP was. So, you know, myself never drafted him anywhere. Everything I was saying about him in any corner that I could spruik it out is I was worried about how, A, he was going to fit in that starting lineup when he had struggled significantly in terms of putting up individual stats when he played with those starters last season, and all of his big numbers had come when he was running the bench unit on his own, and the fact that I just don't think he's that good and some regression was going to come. So I was screaming that out, but I was still, you know, way too high on where he ended up being. Of course, that hip injury really killed him this season, and that's just what you can see with his teammate now. You have one of those hip injuries, you may never, ever be the same again. And that's a real worry for Barton. Not as old as Isaiah Thomas, not as small, but he's thin. He's outsized for his position. And the fact that he just didn't look the same at all, really, at any point since returning from that hip injury, really worries me long term for a guy that didn't exactly fit in from a personal statistic point of view in that starting lineup. So he was a big avoid guy to me, and that worked out pretty well in my favor.
Yeah, no, Barton was somebody that came out at 61 in my 8-cat rankings preseason. So that was to begin the preseason. So that was not a good call considering where he ended up at 196.
Who else do you want to go the old Turkish grip on?
I was kind of on Zach LaVine a little bit. Like I was more trusting and believing in the fact that Zach LaVine was going to kind of go back to being more of an efficient shooter the way that he was before his injury, the way he was with Minnesota. So I called Zach LaVine a win for this season.
I'm trying to find where he is on my list here. Oh, there he is. I had him at number 75, so that was below his ADP. So I probably did whiff on Zach. I didn't think that he'd be the guy that he was going to be. I still think I thought he'd average over 21 points a game. I did worry about his efficiency, but he exceeded any expectations I had in that area. It's going to be interesting to see what the Bulls do in terms of bringing guys in around him and next season and how they view him. I still have some worries about him long term. I don't think that this cements him as this guy necessarily moving forward every year. And I feel like there might be some overvaluing occurring with Zach, but he did play, you know, extraordinarily well this season. And that was a huge plus for him and for Bulls fans and for anyone who took that risk on him in the draft. So I was a little bit down on him, even though I did think that he was going to be a 20-point-per-game scorer. I just worried about where the other value was going to come from. But he brought it for us in those efficiency numbers and really looked good in doing it.
And I wasn't much higher. I wasn't much higher than you. I was only at 57 with him. He finished at 32nd ranked for 8-cat, but it's just, you know, if you're in the general projection of or the idea of where the player is going, that's kind of how I'm leaning on the right or wrong edge of things.
An interesting one that I want to talk about is Klay Thompson. I had him ranked really far down, and he started off the season horribly. I had him at 72nd. He was getting drafted pick 28 on average in Yahoo. Now, he ended up outside the top 40, started off really poorly, came home really strong. I'm not even sure if I count that as a win or a loss. I was like saying, don't pick him at this spot, but he obviously didn't fall as far as I thought he was. So I'm not sure if I count that as a win or a loss in terms of the projections from Klay, because he was a guy, along with CJ McCollum, that were like, yeah, where they're being drafted, I'm not into it. Like, CJ was getting picked at 31 and he had a rank of 69.
Giggity!
But they didn't end up quite as bad as I thought they would, but still didn't live up to that ADP number, which is something that I thought they would. I just went a little bit too far on the negative side.
Yeah, and I had Klay at 69 to... I had Klay at 69.
Yeah.
Giggity!
You can get one of those.
Thank you.
I was
just waiting for that drop, brother.
Yeah, I thought you were. I was a little bit slow.
You're right. How do you discern that? Because in some respects, by ranking them as low as both of us, or ranking Klay as low as we both did, I mean, that's gotta at least. It's like, again, the 43 that he finished off with for 8-cat is kind of like halfway of where between where we ranked him and where he was getting drafted. So it's like that's honestly probably where a lot of people drafted him, if they were kind of like weighing the two and saying, where can I realistically maybe get him if I do want him?
Yeah, it's
if he drops.
Yeah, it is a hard one, like, because you're ideally saying don't draft this guy there, and you're not going to have that opportunity to do it. But if you go too far down, how does that end up working? And again, I copped shit for having CJ McCollum ranked behind Buddy Hield. I had him ranked behind Robert Covington, had him ranked behind Doncic and Ayton, and people were pretty, you know, like, oh, how can you have that? No way that I picked these guys over these guys. In the end, that ended up being correct. I'm not saying I'm correct on everything. Obviously, that's the point of this podcast. But yeah, that was something that, and I think this is worth mentioning just overall, is the fact that, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, Clay's numbers might be the same as they were 3 or 4 years ago, Kyle, but the fact that his value is derived from three-pointers, and back then he was one of two guys hitting three threes a game, and now there's 20 of them or 30 of them, then the overall value of that stat, his numbers come much more closer to average in that category, which was the real standout that he had. So his overall other numbers drop down. Same with CJ McCollum. When so much of your value is coming from high efficiency three-pointers, and then the efficiency drops off and everyone else is catching up and you're banging three threes a game, then your value drops pretty considerably. And that's why I had those two guys lower than the consensus.
That's reasonable, brother.
I just want to, we're going to wrap this up pretty soon here. A couple of guys I do want to talk about that I was much higher on than anticipation is, of course, the Italian cock, Danilo Gallinari, who was being drafted apparently at the ADP of 133 on Yahoo. I had him at 65. I was still too low on him, but he was a guy that I was really big on targeting. Same with Nikola Vucevic of the Orlando Magic, who had an ADP stunningly of 58. I had him at 37. He ended up the season as the 14th ranked player, so obviously well exceeded my ranking, but still, he was that guy that we were looking to target. I was looking to target in that third round area. And if you were going by ADP, he was going, you know, way, way later, and I would have sniped you ahead there. How did you view those two guys?
Nikola Vucevic, that's somebody who I don't think anybody saw what was coming this year.
Not this level.
I did think that it was more possible that he would stick with the Magic all season than a lot of people did. I think a lot of people anticipated him to get traded away, whereas I was saying, like, well, it depends on this and this and this. And yep, as long as they stayed in contention for a playoff spot, there was almost no way in heck he was going to get traded away. So that's where they ended. And once he was named to the All-Star team, no way, man. There's no way in heck they were going to trade him away right before the All-Star game. No way. After not having an All-Star for so long. So somebody who
they made the playoffs and they've taken a game off the 2 seed, the Raptors, in game one. So the decision's correct.
Absolutely. And who was the other guy? I'm sorry, brother.
Danilo Gallinari.
I completely whiffed on him from the perspective that I didn't take him anywhere. He must have won so many people championships, or at least got them into the playoffs to give them an opportunity to fight for the championship with how he played this season and the fact that he was gone as late as he was. He's the guy who previous to this season, I think you would always see him project out well. And even this year, it's not that his projections necessarily said he was going to be terrible, but it was always the specter of, is Gallinari going to actually be healthy? Because he came in 98th in my cap projections, which says, okay, you're going to be drafting him. And he definitely should have been drafted by somebody as a flyer at the end of a draft in every single league. But I'm sure there's constipated times where I didn't take him. And like, that's just, he's a cautionary tale in a lot of respects in regard to taking a flyer on those injured guys at the end of your draft, especially if it's someone who's not currently injured. Although yeah, was it last summer or the summer before that Gallinari punched somebody in international play and broke his wrist?
It was the summer of 2017.
Okay.
So it was before that season where he tore his ass a couple of times.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Jeez, old Pete, man. That's the other thing. We were coming into it with him having two booty injuries, and it was kind of hard. He was a hard sell this season, and anybody who bought definitely prospered.
And now next season, he's probably going to be overdrafted. So that's the way these things work.
Oh, my God.
We'll start to wrap this up here. If you want to give us a rapid fire of some other guys that you may have missed or got right, I'll go through some of mine. I was pretty high on Mike Conley. That worked out pretty well for me until the end of the season. I missed on Chris Dunn and Josh Richardson, even though I will tell anybody that wants to hear it that Chris Dunn's not a good NBA player. I thought the opportunity for him to put up stats would be here, and he still disappointed us in that regard. I had Blake Griffin too low. I had Kyle Anderson too high. I had Nick Batum too high. I really missed on Tyreke Evans as well. Yusuf Nurkic, I had him significantly higher than ADP, but still too low there. But he was a guy that I was pretty happy with how he panned out. And Jarrett Allen was a weird one because at the start of drafting season, I had him significantly in a better spot than his ADP. But by the end of preseason, his ADP had come right in. And that's when I was saying stay away at pick number 50, which is where he was going by the time that we were at the start of October. And that was like way too high for me. So I sort of like, yeah, was too high. I was high on him at the start when his ADP was so low and then pushed away. And that's, you know, making those adjustments and decisions is important. Like he can become the sleeper at the start of September when Yahoo brings him out ranked 190th and go, well, grab him in those late rounds. And then when they adjust, you can say, well, now I'm completely off him. You don't have to stick, well, he's my sleeper. I've got to take him now. No, I've just got to have Jarrett Allen. I've got to have him at pick 50 when there's no upside in that sort of a selection.
Rapid fire. I was wrong on Bazemore. I thought that the Hawks would lean on him more early in the season, give him minutes so that they could trade him. But in reality, I think they realized pretty early that he had no trade value with his contract, which is why we got to see a lot more Huerta this season, which is I'm all for. So ultimately, I was glad I was wrong about Kent Bazemore playing more minutes. Miles Turner and Yusuf Nurkic, I think I did a fair job at least making the argument that there was still considerable upside with both of those guys, and it was worth taking them closer to where they were ranked last season, but I still didn't necessarily do the best job putting that into where they came out and my projections. Jeremy Lin, I expected to have a much bigger role with the Hawks, but part of the role, Kevin Huerter playing a bigger role. I was wrong on that. And I expected Dario Saric to play a bigger role this season than what he did both on Philadelphia and then of course with Minnesota, but I was wrong on that occasion. And then similarly, I guess I'm just sticking with all the crap I got wrong, but Bogdan Bogdanovic with the Kings, I expected him to be the starter more so than I did Buddy Hield simply because of some of the precedent set the season prior, and I definitely didn't expect Bogdan Bogdanovic come off the bench as much as he did this year, regardless of who the hell else they had on that roster. So those are the things that I think I got wrong more than anything. We were right about the Bucks minutes being limited, which was cool. That was kind of nice to see, even though Giannis kind of beat our expectations by just improving across the board in other statistics to help lock him up as the number three guy. Although we were still ardent. We were like, no matter what, like even if Giannis improves, the fact that he's not going to play more minutes, it's going to be really hard for him to be better than Anthony Davis or James Harden. And that's the way it played out. Also, everybody got James Harden wrong. Nobody could have predicted what he did from day one going forward. So because he was putting up just historically stupid stats, and what are you going to do? Sorry.
Yeah, I had him at number two. I had Davis at number one, which is obviously wrong at this point, irrespective of the trade request from Davis. But yeah, we couldn't have predicted that Harden would take his game to another level. The other one I just want to mention, I had Caris LeVert. He was an ADP of 140. I had him inside the top 100, which looked great at the start of the season. Then he got hurt and struggled at the end. But I thought that ended up looking great, and you can't foresee a guy dislocating his ankle after putting together a strong start to a season. Kyle, that'll do us here because we could probably go through every single player and talk about their ups and downs. But I think we covered enough there.
That would be even more fun though.
We'll just record for 24 hours straight.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'll give myself one that I got right. I got DJ Augustine right.
I knew
he was gonna be the starter.
I didn't think they'd lean on him as much as they did.
And he was freaking awesome yesterday. So good for you.
he was absolutely unbelievable. And down the stretch, the thing that I liked about what Orlando did, not to go too far into at the end of the season, they said, well, we're pushing for the playoffs now. We're going to lean more on DJ Augustine. We're going to play him 31 minutes a game. And then they did. And it worked. Like they said what they were going to do. They did it. And it made sense. And it worked. And it was just perfect coaching from Clifford in that regard. And something we appreciate in the fantasy community when coaches just say what they mean and are predictable and do the things that make the most sense, because other coaches try and dick each other around and make confusing moves that don't make any sense. Whereas Clifford was like, no, these are our guys. These are our nine guys. They're going to play consistent roles. They're going to get used to those roles and it's going to work out for them, because they're not the most talented team. They're probably not the seventh most talented team, but they went in there, knew what they needed to do, and executed it well. And that's, to me, that's a huge win from what Clifford was able to do.
Can I ask you one question? I promise it'll be the last one. Okay. What do you think about Luke Walton as the new head coach of the Sacramento Kings?
It's an
interesting... And I mean, think about it in context of what their roster is. So, like, in some respects, he shouldn't be able to have wonky rotations with this team because I would think that they have some kind of defined roles for certain players, but maybe not.
I think what it means, I think we're going to see a lot more of Bagley next season. I think we'll see that from Walton. We won't have this real hesitancy from what Jaeger was doing and playing. You know, Bielitsa's fine, but he's not a guy that you needed to be playing significant minutes over him. Corley Stein, who knows? I doubt he'll be back on this team. I don't think we'll get that weird small forward wasteland of, you know, Iman Shumpert starting over a Bogdanovic. They still need to bring someone in. Is that Harrison Barnes in that position? Obviously, Walton has familiarity with Barnes, but I don't think there's going to be massive changes there. But I think we'll get a little bit more common sense. Although Walton's had his moments. You know, the lack of Julius Randle and Brook Lopez playing time last season was a real concern in terms of his rotations. And sometimes his offense can be a little bit stagnant, but he's not adverse to playing up-tempo, which the Kings and De'Aaron Fox and Bagley really thrive on. So I think that'll work in their favor as well. That another coach who will be able to instill those up-tempo sort of decisions or up-tempo offensive scheme will help those guys develop.
Awesome. Thanks, Josh.
Cool. Thanks. And you can catch Kyle on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA. You can find me on Twitter at RedRock_Beeble. Subscribe to this podcast on the new Himalaya podcast app, also on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or on Spotify. Kyle, thanks for jumping on again.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Josh. Go Bucks.
Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Enes Kanter.